Hello and welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Josh and I'm glad you've joined us for day two of our speed review lesson. And I have Ellen and Pam back with me in the studio as we talk about groupthink in our article entitled What Goes Wrong in Groupthink. And we're on pages 12 and 13 in your August magazines. It's hard to believe August is here. We're almost through a hot summer here in Taipei, and we hope you have your August magazines purchased and in front of you, or maybe you're looking at your smartphone, hopefully not while driving, or maybe you're on your computer. And either way, we're excited that you're with us. We had a good discussion yesterday about what happens in organizations, teams, group projects when things are not effective. And we call that groupthink sometimes. Right, Ellen?
Right. As we discussed yesterday, this idea that when you bring more than one head together, you know, two or three heads together, it should end up with more creativity and better decisions, but as we learned yesterday, sometimes it doesn't.
Ellen, you work as a team editing the Let's Talk in English magazine. Are those meetings productive?
I try to make them productive. Yeah, we try to encourage people to give us feedback and give us good ideas.
What are some of the reasons maybe you think you have less than productive meetings?
Sometimes we do kind of veer off into tangents, which is just a topic that isn't exactly what we set out to talk about in the first place.
You lose sight of the goal.
Right.
That can happen. And Pam, welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be back, Josh.
I know a lot of our listeners are excited to hear your voice again after a year away from the studio.
Well, it's always wonderful to get back in Advanced Studio. I feel a little rusty when I get back in. You know, it involves some, I feel like I should practice at home, but but it doesn't take long, and I feel comfortable again.
Well, it's great to have you.
Thank you.
Well, yesterday we talked about how sometimes organizations can fall into a couple of traps, and our author introduced us, or our two authors, introduced us to these phrases, informational signals and social pressures.
Right. Good terms. These are some things that the writers said they've observed happen in meetings. This would be the negatives that occur. Informational signals just refers to the fact that people are afraid to contradict someone else who has already shared, perhaps a leader, a boss, or someone else who seems to have good ideas most of the time.
Yeah, the expert in a certain field with that knowledge that perhaps you didn't know and you're not, you know, comfortable challenging them. Or maybe they are beating a drum that they've been beating for a long time, right? There's some people who sometimes bring a certain viewpoint to a meeting and they're always harping on it. Have you met those kinds of people?
Yes, and, you know, unfortunately, I probably have been that type of people every so often.
But what are you always harping about, Ellen?
Too many things.
Well, it just means that, yeah, you're not creating an environment that's conducive to being challenged, to hearing opposing viewpoints, maybe to hearing tough news.
Right. In other words, you're not very open to what others might want to share with you.
And what about this idea of social pressures, Ellen?
Well, this is the idea that if you say something or give information that might contradict, as we mentioned earlier, you will gain disapproval from the leaders. Mm. And that could, in turn, become some type of punishment.
And who wrote this book, Pam?
The book was written by Cass R. Sunstein. And he served in the White House, in the Obama White House, actually. And Reed Hasty, he's what they call an academic.
He works at the Booth School of Business in Chicago. And he is a psychologist and an expert on decision making. and how we make decisions. And we talked about at the opening yesterday, we're often asked to make decisions in groups, right?
Right. And I think I did express this viewpoint yesterday, that some of the best bosses are hesitant to make all of the decisions themselves, and they hire different people based on their skills and their expertise that they can bring into the company. So a lot of companies use this group method to come up with ideas and plans.
That's right. And sometimes they even go outside the company. I have read about organizations that have brought in customers and asked them in a kind of a focus group setting to brainstorm new ideas for companies and maybe even new business lines. And that actually was really successful for a deodorant company. Unilever makes Axe deodorant. And I think I'm giving away something that we're going to feature in an advanced article next month. But it talked about how that a whole new product was created by just people who were passionate about Axe body spray. So good ideas can come from anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think even our listeners could give us a good idea?
Absolutely. We receive great feedback from our listeners through the letters account, letters@studioclassroom.com. If you have ideas or opinions that you want to share, please do write us.
Do you get any actual letters?
Oh, we do. We get lots of letters.
Handwritten letters?
Yes, well, no. You know what?
Well, I mean, not emails, right. I mean, do you ever get a handwritten on a piece of paper that was put in an envelope and mailed letter?
Yes, we did recently. We have a very faithful listener who, I believe, he learned his English through translated Russian, and he wrote to tell us his English journey. It was fascinating.
Wow.
And it was a great letter. We were so happy to receive it.
Have you written a letter in the last 5 years, Ellen?
No.
It's a lost art. I, when I lived here in Asia, pre-email would write letters home all the time. And I think people appreciate receiving a letter, but it's not done much anymore. Well, before we go on to today's lesson, was there a word or phrase that maybe we skipped over yesterday or you thought would be helpful to review?
I really like the word predisposed. I think it's very important in this discussion, is this idea that we all do come into groups and discussions with our own ideas and our own kind of viewpoint. And of course, you know, we want to advocate for that viewpoint. And yeah, it's important to know, but it's important to kind of set aside too.
Good point.
And we covered the word validate yesterday as the verb, and we also talked about validation. It's a good word. It's a good word to know. We all seek to be validated, that just means we want the approval of our parents, of our teachers, of our bosses. That's just human nature.
And it doesn't have to be abstract, right? You can also get your parking ticket validated.
That's right.
Which is important if you don't want to pay for parking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're moving on to page 13 today, and we're going to ask Steve to read where you see the five.
Having laid out the core problems, the authors offer solutions. They begin with a list of methods aimed at counteracting the four core problems, such as: leaders have to keep quiet and convince group members that they sincerely want to hear all ideas. Group success, not individual success, should be rewarded. Group members must understand that if the group is right, everyone benefits. This will encourage them to ensure that they find the right answer rather than pushing their own ideas. Group members should be assigned specific roles. For example, one person is the medical expert, another the legal expert, thus ensuring that everyone contributes. Either individuals or assigned teams, known as red teams, should be tasked with acting as devil's advocates.
Thank you, Steve. So, we learned about two of the major problems yesterday that leads to four specific problems. So, we've got all the problems laid out, right? Now it's time to talk about the solutions.
Yay.
We all like solutions, don't we?
Right.
Especially men. They love solutions, right? They begin, it says, with a list of methods aimed at doing what?
Counteracting. So counteracting is going against or solving the problems.
And what are some of their tips?
I like number one. I think this is very good. They say that leaders have to keep quiet. That's pretty interesting, isn't it? So you know you've got a very self-assured leader, boss or supervisor, if they go in and basically let the group know, okay, I'm stepping back. This is your meeting. You need to feel free to share. Because they go on to say that success for the group will be knowing that everyone will benefit if the group is right.
There's some good points in there. First of all, they have to be sincere about it, right? It can be something they say up front, but not really mean, right? In terms of wanting to hear all ideas.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as we said before, sometimes we go into meetings and we have our own ideas, and leaders sometimes will hint at their ideas here and there. And they don't actually sometimes want to hear ideas. So, yes, it's very important for leaders to actually very seriously want to hear other people's opinions.
And a lot of organizations have sacred cows where there's something that you would just never criticize the boss about, right?
Right. And somehow everyone seems to know. No matter what it is, you kind of know what that sacred cow, what that thing is that's the untouchable or even the unmentionable. It can't be changed.
And sometimes it's healthy to mention it.
Right.
But often, you're right, organizations and their members just quietly, you know, sometimes skip over the fact that we're not addressing the real issue or it's out of our control, like you said. I actually worked for a boss once who just wouldn't attend the meetings. He purposely would say, it's not going to be effective if I'm in it. You're all going to be trying to find out what I want or impress me. So he wouldn't attend.
How did that work out?
Hit and miss. Mm-hmm. Yeah, oftentimes you needed his input.
Mm.
And he would then circle back and not get the full picture of what was discussed. So I understood where his motive was, but I'm not sure it was always the best mm-hmm. plan of action. Well, we go on, it says group success should be rewarded, not individual success.
I liked something you said earlier, Josh, that oftentimes in meetings, it can be a very competitive setting. You've got people who want to score points with the boss. And so they are trying to make themselves look good and their points look important, even at the expense of the other group members sometimes.
That's true. Oftentimes they're beating their own drum instead of addressing the issues.
Right, absolutely. You know, in English we say it's a dog-eat-dog kind of environment, and it just means people are out for their own success.
Well, it says if they can understand that if the group is right, everyone wins. That if we come to the right conclusion, if we make a good decision, we're all going to get credit for it.
That's right.
People aren't going to say, necessarily, hey, whose idea was that anyway? Though I think they might ask that. And someone might take credit for it. But hopefully the group wins together. And everyone who is a part of getting to that good decision will get some credit for it. Well, it says group members should be assigned specific roles.
I like this. I think this is very specific. It helps you understand each person there will play a part. And it even gives the idea that you may have a little bit of homework, prep work that you need to do before you get there. The example that the writer gives is that one person might be the medical expert, another might be the legal expert. So that's the information or the expertise that they'll bring in.
And notice it's assigned. It's mm-hmm. very deliberate. It's not just, oh, we hope that Ellen can mention her past experience with so-and-so. It's before the meeting, telling you specifically, you are going to be the such-and-such expert. You know, bring some research on the audience or a competitive review or share something that we're going to then look to you as our de facto expert on.
Yeah, I really like this idea because I think it kind of gives people a purpose in the meeting apart from just sitting there and listening. It gives them also, you know, this responsibility to actually know what they're talking about and to contribute. And in this way, I guess you wouldn't have as much overlap. You know, there's not as much competition to have more medical information or have more legal information than somebody else because you all have different jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would also eliminate people just throwing out random facts or anecdotes without any real data.
Right. I think it would cut back on that. As Ellen just said, you're bringing forth what you've prepared, what you've researched, and so you have some actual knowledge to share.
Not just, oh, this is what I heard one person say. Let's do that, right? I've said it several times. Anecdotes are not data.
True.
And four anecdotes are not data, right? You really need some real numbers. Well, and then it also says that someone might get sort of a tough job assigned to them as the devil's advocate.
I like this. This term, let's look at it, the devil's advocate. Someone who pretends in an argument or discussion to be against an idea. So this means they're not really, but they're pretending to be against the plan that a lot of people support. Why? Because they want to cause people to think about it and discuss it in more detail. Now, another way we use this phrase, you could say, he always plays the devil's advocate. He's just aggravating. He's just contrary. He's not easy to be around.
Yeah,
he always takes a negative viewpoint.
I didn't think the definition was exclusively pretending, right? Mm-hmm. I thought sometimes people write. They seem to always disagree with what you have to say, and they're genuine about it. So I think that's still the devil's advocate too, right?
Yes.
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. We do often say, oh, Pam, let me play devil's advocate for a minute and give you another way to think about the decision you're going to make.
Right.
Right?
Because you are, in that case, you are sincerely trying, you're trying to help the person see something from another viewpoint, and a different perspective.
And that can be helpful in a meeting. And say, okay, the group seems to be all leaning towards this decision. What if we do it this way? Or what would happen if we didn't do it? And try to put a different scenario in front of the group. Do you think that's an easy role, Ellen?
No, it's definitely not. It's not one that's popular at all. Most people who play devil's advocate will meet a lot of resistance. But as Pam said, it's very important. It's a very important role because then it does force the group to think in a lot more detail. A lot of ideas sound great when they're very general. But once you really, you know, get your hands dirty, you know, they become a lot less ideal and a lot less great.
Great. Well, before we move on to our last column, let's listen to this short feature. Thanks for meeting with me, Johnson.
Sure, boss.
We are a leading kitchen products company, but our competitors are gaining ground.
Perhaps you're right, boss.
We need to launch some new products that today's chef can't live without.
Perhaps you're right, boss.
How do you think that brainstorming meeting went last week?
I think it went very well, boss.
I hate to contradict you, Johnson, but I thought the meeting was a complete waste of time.
Oh, perhaps you're right, boss.
What was the goal of the meeting?
You asked us to come up with two new products that we could take to the market by the end of the year, and we sent you our top two ideas.
Right. About these ideas, Johnson. A waterproof toaster? I don't think anyone wants to make toast while they're scuba diving.
Well, perhaps you're right, boss.
And an automatic banana peeler? How much time is that going to save anyone?
Well, banana peels can be tricky.
I'm trying to stay open-minded, Johnson, but that could be the worst idea I've ever heard.
Yes, perhaps you're right, boss.
It seems our office is suffering from groupthink. why didn't people speak up and voice their opinion that these were terrible ideas?
We tried to create an environment where every idea is on the table.
That's fine, but someone needs to be the devil's advocate and take some of the ideas off the table.
Perhaps you're right, boss.
We need people that can be tight and analytical and work to validate whether these ideas are any good.
Yes, perhaps you're right, boss.
It sounds to me like informational signals and social pressures are keeping us from sharing our honest opinions.
Perhaps you're right, boss.
And that starts with you, Johnson.
Huh?
Stop agreeing with everything I say.
Right. I think you're right, boss.
Groups also fail, the authors write, because they don't distinguish between the sloppy early rounds of deliberations, in which all ideas must be allowed on the table, and the final rounds of deliberations, in which groups must be tight and analytical as they seek the precise solution. Successful groups will deliberately separate the two processes. In another approach, the authors demonstrate that the wisdom of crowds, making decisions based on the average or majority of large crowds of people, will often lead to the right answer if a majority of crowd members know their material. Decision makers often prefer to rely on one single expert, but chasing the expert significantly reduces the probability of getting the decision right. Wiser is a quick, engaging, and thoughtful read that compellingly argues that with a few simple steps and open-minded leadership, group deliberations can, indeed, lead to wiser decisions.
Thank you, Steve. Well, we learned that groups also fail because of not distinguishing between the types of meetings that they're having.
Right. They say that they don't distinguish between the sloppy or messy early rounds of discussions. And I think, Ellen, yesterday you gave us the term brainstorming. When we brainstorm, that's what I see as brainstorming. We meet together, we just toss out lots and lots of ideas. Well, that's the messy early round, but we have to distinguish that from something else that will follow.
The final rounds, it says. But that idea of something being on the table, what does that mean, Ellen?
Well, when we put something on the table, it is open to discussion. It is open for people to make suggestions or plan. And oftentimes that's where you kind of begin to really focus or choose something to focus on.
And do we use the opposite of that phrase, off the table?
Yes, we do.
What's that mean?
It just means it's no longer up for discussion. A decision has been made.
Take it off the table. We're not going to discuss it.
Can't discuss it.
Hopefully in marriages we say divorce is off the table.
Right.
Right? No one's going to bring it up.
That's right.
Cause it, you know, make it as an option for them.
Can't talk about it.
Well, it says in final rounds of deliberations, these groups must be tight and analytical. That's a interesting way to describe a group meeting.
Right. I think perhaps they've had early meetings. We don't know. Perhaps that's the idea that the author is leaning toward. But they've gotten through all of the preliminaries. They've narrowed it down. Now they're having to be very analytical. They're examining their options very carefully.
So we're not going on and on about something and going on tangents. We're being focused. We are analyzing maybe a short list of options instead of a whole whiteboard of ideas.
Right. You know, at the end of that sentence, it says to seek a precise solution. So you have identified what the issue is, and now you are identifying the specific solution for it.
And it says the successful groups will deliberately separate those two processes, the brainstorming round from the analytical round. And now we're using the term deliberately, an adverb, which is different than deliberate.
Right. It just means intentionally, to do something on purpose.
Great. Well, in another approach, it says our authors demonstrate the wisdom of crowds will often lead to the right answer. Had you heard that phrase before, Ellen?
Not really, actually.
Well, you read it in business books sometimes, this idea that if everyone believes something, it must be true.
Mm.
Or if everyone thinks a book is popular, it must be a great book. Is it always?
Probably not.
Not always, but it often is, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
I used to fly a lot in airplanes and just see the people reading the same book over a course of time, and it was a bestseller, and yeah, you're just compelled. The wisdom of crowds kind of pushes you to check it out.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it's pretty good. Well, but maybe that's just the flights I'm on, surrounded by people like me. Well, it says it'll often lead to the right answer if a majority of the crowd knows their material.
This is an important point. Now, we've talked about, I think the processes that we've talked about today will intentionally lead these groups to prepare, research, and know their material. Otherwise, if they don't, you'll get all kinds of crazy ideas.
And especially if they're just listening to one person,
mm-hmm.
that one expert, it says, but chasing the expert, a phrase there in quotes, reduces the probability of getting the decision right. So chasing the expert, meaning doing whatever he or she says, because they know the most about this topic.
Right.
It's an interesting but probably common phenomenon with organizations. Well, in our final paragraph, we say Wiser, which is the name of the book, if you've forgotten, is a quick, engaging, and thoughtful read that argues with a few simple steps and open-minded leadership that you can, as a group, come to better decisions. Do you believe it's possible?
I do believe it's possible. You have to go in with an open mind, ready to accept new ideas.
Well, we hope you will come with an open mind to our next lesson here in the advanced class. But it's August 5th, and we need to take a quick moment and say, happy birthday, Doris.
Happy birthday,
Doris.
Peng Lao Shi, it's your birthday today, and we love you. So take a moment and maybe wish her happy birthday on our Facebook page, or write us at letters@studioclassroom.com. And come back next time for a brand new article. Until then, goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.